Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside, just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York, Andrew Gundling. JJ Devaney, what's up, brother?
Just back from a weekend of apple picking.
Yeah.
Not a whole weekend. You know, a couple of hours yesterday. And that's enough for everyone. Because once you pick one, like, it's more about the ambiance and the nature and the mountains and the fresh air. The actual apple picking part is, it's just an excuse to get out in the countryside, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, like, the picking of the apples, though, like, you can eat them, you can make stuff with them. Like, they don't serve, it's not like they serve no purpose.
Sure,
I get it. The highlight is to be kind of like out among nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is, it was a spectacularly beautiful weekend in upstate New York.
Yeah. Ah, love it. God's country. Hey, for everyone out there who thought they were tuning into a soccer podcast tonight, this is actually going to be me talking about Phillies baseball for the next hour. So if you're not into that, I would say go away now and join us later in the week.
This is not the content that got us top of the Apple iTunes ratings for soccer in the U.S.
So
top three
Harper's eighth inning home run. Let's talk about it.
Oh, my God. I couldn't think of anything worse.
Now, among all-time Philly home runs, it rates where, would you say?
I don't know, Andrew, and I just want you to cease and desist. Guys, for those of you who, as you know, we're not yet a visual podcast, but Andrew's in his nice little Phillies hoodie, looking pretty smug with himself, pretty happy about himself.
With a Ryan Howard shirt underneath.
Yeah, he's double layered with Philly goodness.
I just can't even, it's one of those things I can't believe it's happening. It's like, we're obviously not going to talk about it, but everyone listening to this is a sports fan. You can all relate to those kinds of things. I just, like, I'm watching this run unfold and I just can't believe what I'm seeing. This has just been the most fun. It's amazing. But
it's the truth. It's like in anything, though, in any sport, you get to the postseason, get yourself in, anything can happen.
And that is what we are witnessing right now. Although I do think they're legitimately good, but, like, I don't think this is the stuff of, like, flukiness, but that's all for another day. Tweet me. I'll do a Twitter Spaces later this week, JJ, for soccer fans who are also interested in my thoughts on the Phillies run. Because I have so many thoughts. That's not why we're here. All right, settle down, everyone. All right, before you hit off or next or, you know, scan through this portion of the podcast, don't worry. We're going to talk all of the soccer, all of it. Before we get to that, just a reminder, we are not the website Caught Offside. And just a reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review. Subscribe, rate, and review. Subscribe, rate, and review. And tell friends. All of those things help the visibility of the podcast. And in this time when we have gone independent, visibility has never been more important than it is right now. So do all of those things because we love you for it. And it's a huge help to us and what we're doing here.
and follow us on Twitter at CO Soccer Pod, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com if you've got an email you'd like to send us. And if you want to discover more, even more, you can go to our Instagram, caughtoffsidepod. I removed the ESPN.
Nice. There you go. What a professional. And a special shout out to the animals on the Reddit page as well. I know they've been just super instrumental in getting the word out, and almost like a PR wing, unpaid. They just, out of the goodness of their hearts, they may be animals, but they're good, kind animals. And we thank them for it. So I suggest everyone who's a fan of the show, check out the Caught Offside Reddit page, because it's a really fun place. Great conversations on there, great threads going on. So do that as well. I think they have their fantasy soccer league, fantasy Premier League thing going on. So we should probably update the standings on that at some point. So it's, boy, there's a whole Caught Offside world out there that's just begging for you to hop in. And it's a great time.
And later this week, we will have a YouTube page up and running.
Oh my God.
There won't be anything on it yet, but I'll tell you where to go to subscribe and get us started on that new journey. A visual
It's just
going to
be a Leroy Jenkins video on a loop.
Leroy Jenkins on a loop. What else do we really like? Actually, Troy Deeney's goal for Watford against Leicester. Deeney! And maybe shout out to the listener who created Pro Evo Andy, which was just basic white guy, as we said before, budget Clint Dempsey, in the Pro Evo graphics. Can you send that picture to me again? Because I really want to make a T-shirt out of that. Who would wear a Pro Evo Andy T-shirt? I think I would.
I don't think I would. It seems demeaning and beneath me. But at any rate, JJ, let's talk about the weekend. We'll get to some of the MLS stuff, because I believe I had it in front of me, but since I came down here to record, I believe Austin and FC Dallas has just gone final. It has. Austin are into the conference finals. They just beat FC Dallas 2-1. Oof, what a win for them. We're going to get a rematch in the East of last year's conference final between the Union and NYCFC. So we'll give some thoughts on that, of course, later on in the podcast. But we start, JJ, in what was a fascinating weekend in the Premier League. I say fascinating because sometimes I kind of look at some of these weekends as, like, when it's all said and done and the dust is kind of settling from the weekend, I think, okay, who are kind of my big winners from the weekend, my losers from the weekend? And, like, it was just interesting to see how this weekend shaped out, because, like, teams had an opportunity here to take advantage of certain things, and a lot of teams did not. I feel like there were really a lot of losers this weekend, and probably only two winners. I suppose Man City would be a winner for winning and closing the gap a little bit on Arsenal, and Newcastle, who we'll talk about in a sec. But Arsenal, I guess, would go in the losers column, JJ, with a 1-1 draw against Southampton.
Yeah, and I feel bad saying that, because when did 1-1 draws that were, you know, at the start of a season, Southampton can be tricky away at St. Mary's. I know they've not been in the best form. I know they're a Jekyll and Hyde kind of side. But the idea that a 1-1 draw is ultimately a bad result. I mean, it was reflected in the comments by Ben White, Mikel Arteta afterwards. Generally, there was a lot of disappointment.
It is a bad result.
It's a bad result because if Arsenal have put themselves in this position at the top of the table, and now they are just 2 points ahead of City, and they would be expected to beat Southampton. They led the game, all those things. But, like, in and of itself, in the course of a season where they've only lost one game, and a game in which they could have won at Old Trafford, like, 1-1 draws. Once upon a time, they were pretty normal. They were stock and trade for a team that was running for a championship. But now, because of the, you know, the tear City are going to go on, they're unlikely to lose again, maybe until they play somebody like Liverpool or indeed Arsenal themselves. So you have to win all your games. And that's the standard.
Like, you're right. Like, the Manchester City conversation is a big part of it. But your whole kind of, like, once upon a time angle of it, okay, maybe that's true. But don't you feel like there's been, whether we like it or not, there's been a kind of a distancing among the top six from much of the rest of the league, where now 1-1 draws against teams that are, what, 15th, 14th in the table are kind of, like, Arsenal are top. You know,
that's not
good luck finding an Arsenal fan out there who will see it the way you're seeing it.
That's a, of course, because they're disappointed. And that disappointment was reflected by Mikel Arteta. Ben White, like I said, just called it a sloppy second half performance. And it wasn't good enough. First half was pretty, was a good performance. And then Southampton got more into it. I'm just saying, like, a 1-1 draw shouldn't necessarily be the sky is falling, but there is a definite amount of disappointment. And you talk about the top six. The only two teams that have not really done 1-1 draws over the past 5 years, with certain years in exception, have been Manchester City and Liverpool. There's no, they've been so far ahead of everybody else. Those are the only two teams you're talking about. Arsenal will be disappointed definitely today, and just a sense that there was a sense, and Arteta wouldn't allow it to be said, but that they looked tired in the second half, and that maybe this exceptional season with all its games might be catching up on them already, with the intensity of the games. But I don't know.
Well, you go hang your 1-1 draw banner.
What are you on about hanging banners? Like, what a trite comment to make, especially considering what banner are you going to hang today? The surrender flag, is it? Greatest start to a season in 59 years. Don't even start with me.
I haven't said a word about that as you sit here and praise Arsenal for drawing 1-1 at Southampton.
I'm not going to kill. I just don't feel like killing them. It doesn't make sense to me to kill them. And I thought Southampton played well in the second half. They took their goal. It was actually a really good move and a really good goal. And look, Arsenal tonight are still top of the league. I still think it's been an exceptional start to the season. You know, just it feels weird for me to start saying, oh, it's so disappointed. Like, the players will be disappointed because they're on this run, but I don't think it's the end of the world.
Well, no, it's not the end of the world. Like you said, they are still top. They have a small cushion over Manchester City of 2 points. Of course, it's not the end of the world, especially with results that happen around them. You know, the gap wasn't narrowed by Tottenham, Chelsea and United drew. So, you know, of course it could have been worse. But I'm just saying, if, you know, when you're top of the table and you're playing the way that they've been playing and you go to Southampton, you expect to walk out of there with 3 points. That's just the nature of the beast. You know, circumstances change expectations, and theirs have leveled up. And they, you know, they could see it as a potential missed opportunity this past weekend, because they are clearly a superior team to Southampton. One of the things you talked about here on the rundown was this idea of squad depth. And, you know, Arsenal, like everyone, they're playing a lot of games. They're playing Europa League fixtures mixed in among their Premier League fixtures. And this idea that could be something that holds them back. And I think that's a really interesting issue pertaining to Arsenal. Because when I don't know, man, when I look at their squad and I kind of go through position by position, I kind of think that they actually, I think I would check depth off in the positive column for them. Like, I don't necessarily see it as a liability, not just because of players that they have, you know, like Nketiah as a backup to Jesus. Like, I think that's fine to me, but it's not just that. It's not just the backups. It's also the fact that, like, some of their first team guys are really versatile. Like Ben White, okay, he's right back right now and that's working, but if something were to happen and he needed to shift to center back, well, he can do that as well. We've talked about Zinchenko and, like, okay, he's a great fullback, but he's also potentially a great midfielder. You know, Emil Smith Rowe can play up front. He can play in midfield. So I think, I don't know, I kind of see them as depth not necessarily being a major problem for them.
Well, none of the two of the last players, the latter players that you mentioned there, I mean, they weren't even in the squad today.
Well, Smith Rowe's due back soon.
But it goes to show you, like, a couple of injuries and then you're looking to the bench. Kieran Tierney comes in, obviously. He's a guy Arsenal, I think, would like to start. I was reading Ars blog, and I think he feels as if Tierney for Tomiyasu would be a switch that could be made. But generally speaking, like, I don't think there's that great depth. I don't think it's there. Like you say, Nketiah is okay. Nketiah is not going to come in and replace Gabriel Jesus' goal. It's not happening. I think what happened today, if Gabriel Jesus takes a couple of the chances, I think it was in the first half that he had, then we're talking about a different game.
Who is the team that had, I mean, obviously it's Manchester City, and that's the problem, is we're comparing them to something that's superhuman. But, like, I don't know, who's the team that has a backup at that position where like the goals will be, like, no one really has that, you know? So I don't know. Like, I think they're, in terms of depth, like, I don't necessarily see it that way. That it's
well, Liverpool. It's Liverpool, when their team is fit, if you look at the options they have, in stark contrast to what they actually have right now. But say everyone was fit at Liverpool, you could say they have a forward line that offers those options for sure. And that's right, the standard.
We're going to talk about Liverpool in a minute, and we're going to cite injuries as a major reason for why they're not playing well.
Well, a catastrophic collection of injuries all at once for Liverpool, definitely. But I don't think Arsenal have that much debt. Now, look, Arteta said, we have the same that we had a month ago, 2 days ago, and the same as what we're going to have next week. I don't like to have any excuses. In the second half, we could have played much better, and we could have won much more comfortably than we did. And that's completely down to us. I think the team looked really fresh at the start. I put it more down to the way we played. We should have played better in the second half. So he's not using it as an excuse. But when I look at that squad, I do think you just have a smattering of injuries or some guys, you know, struggle with form. And I do think that Arsenal are on the back foot a little bit in that regard, especially if they're going in a championship race, which is how they've started the season.
Well, that, like I said, that's the problem, is that they're being compared to something that almost feels unfair. Like, to ask them to have the kind of depth of Manchester City, it just isn't realistic, I feel like, for Arsenal. It doesn't necessarily mean that theirs is bad. It's just that Manchester City's is madness. That they, you know, Michael Richards said the difference between Man City and Arsenal is that City can lose a few players and play exactly the same way and can afford to rotate. If Arsenal lose Gabriel Jesus or Zinchenko or Partey, all of a sudden they become a different team. You know, especially with regards to the City side of it, we've talked about it. They lost Kevin De Bruyne at one point and last season, and it doesn't matter. So it's, you know, they're Arsenal and everyone else are kind of being held up to a bar that no one is really going to be able to reach from that respect. So, I mean, look, I don't know. To me, not a great weekend for them, but I suppose I partially agree with you that, yes, it's not a sky is falling type of weekend when looking at them. For a club now who also reside in North London, who maybe the sky is coming a little bit closer to falling, Tottenham with another blah performance, this one at home against a good side in Newcastle. And it's, I don't know, something, we're a broken record, but something just doesn't quite look right for this team.
No, it doesn't look good at all. And you talk about the sky falling, the rain, the way it just pelted down in the second half and made the Spurs players look so bedraggled. It couldn't have been set up more dramatically. But I don't want to start with Spurs, Andrew. Mm-hmm. We'll let you get into Spurs or whatever extra, or maybe you have nothing.
I'll be honest. I don't have a ton to say about them. I feel like it's kind of been, I mean, what new thing is there to really say on the Tottenham perspective? Like, this is kind of what they've looked like for a while. They managed to win a lot of those games. Now they're not. Newcastle is good competition. We see how Tottenham have played against other top sides this season. They haven't really been up for it. So, you know, I know we can get to a little bit of it. I know if you want to start with Newcastle, we'll go with that. I know Conte made some comments and we can address them, but sure, I'd be happy to start with the Newcastle side of it.
Yeah, it's just such a stunning result because they've gone fourth. And this time last season, they were in the relegation zone. And I don't know about you, Andrew, but I didn't think the transformation would be this quick. Did I think the transformation was happening when Saudi Arabia bought Newcastle? 100%. How could you not? That injection of money. But at the same time, I didn't think it would be so quick. I didn't think that they would install themselves as genuine top four contenders, which they absolutely are now.
So I agree with you. And part of the reason I think it's so amazing, like, look at their lineup today. And you see a lot of the same names from when they were in that relegation zone this time last year. Callum Wilson, Joe Linton, Almiron, Fabian Schär. Like, yes, Bruno Guimaraes, Kieran Trippier, they've been vital. Sven Botman was a really important signing. But, like, the jokes in the beginning of all this were that, like, okay, well, now Newcastle will be in on Haaland and Mbappe. And, like, yeah, they've gone out and they've spent money. But, like, Alexander Isak, he's not playing right now. He's out injured. Like, it's a lot of the guys that have been there. So, sure, like, at some point, the financial might of this ownership group will really kick in, and we'll see where that takes them. But I don't think that that's happened yet, and they're still doing
well. It has. I mean, it absolutely has happened.
It has, but a lot of those guys, you know, like I said, some of those guys aren't playing yet. It's like Longstaff, Dan Byrne. Like, these weren't huge signings.
250, 280 million. I don't know what the figure is. So, like, the financial flow has happened. But you're right to say you can argue that it's been things other than just pure money. Now, Kieran Trippier has come into the side, and I was looking at his stats today, Andrew. Like, in terms of his production, in terms of creating chances,
he's been
way out there. He's been in absolutely rare form. He's been excellent for them. Bruno Guimarães, you cannot argue that this is one of those Saudi. A Saudi dividend, we'll put it that way, because this is a player who would not be out of place going. He could go right into Manchester United, right into Arsenal, right into City, and he could improve the side or add to the side, or he wouldn't be out of place. He's absolutely fantastic. And those are the kind of teams that were looking at him and monitoring him. And the reason he's at Newcastle United is because of that money. But what I would, you know, something that kind of struck me was, if we're going to give credit to Eddie Howe, because it does seem to me like, particularly in the last week with his comments about Jurgen Klopp and worried for the children about what it looks like yelling at linesmen when he's owned by probably one of the most repulsive dynasties in the world right now in world politics. Let's just keep it on the football for one second and say that the transformation of, say, someone like Joe Linton into like an attacking midfielder, when he was really bought as an out-and-out centre forward, is, and now do you think he'll even go back to be an out-and-out centre forward? I don't think he will.
No, why would they?
Why would they do that? Because he's doing so well in that, and you got to give Howe and the player himself credit for that. And it kind of poses an interesting question. Adam Crafton said, "The Joe Linton story is amazing, isn't it? I can't remember a player converting position like this so dramatically and effectively, and appearing to have all the senses." An anticipation of a full career in the new position. Now, I tried to think of someone. And the best I could come up with was when Thierry Henry moved from Juventus back in the 99, 2000 it would have been. And Juventus had been using him when he was bought from Monaco as a winger. He played like as an old style winger. And obviously that puts him kind of far away from goal. It puts him out of the picture. And then when Wenger saw him, he said, "I'm going to play him centrally." Now, did he come in from the left? Did he drift in from the right? Yeah, sure. But he was the focal point of that attack. That's really the only one I can think of that was so super successful. Now,
I can give you one. I mean, you tell me if this is what you're thinking of or not. I mean, Bale was a fullback. I think he was a left back originally.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And
that's
then
a good one.
2 years later, he was became the most expensive attacking player in the world. So
that is true. Started his career, his Southampton debut, at fullback, and played fullback for Spurs. In fact,
yeah,
was nearly out the door at Spurs, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
There was talk of being loaned to, where was he going to be loaned to, Cardiff or someone like that, because they didn't feel it was working out. And Tottenham had never won with him playing at fullback or playing anywhere.
Ridiculous run of when he started, they did not win.
They lost.
It was like 20 games or something.
That's a great shout. And like Luis Enrique, like he played left back, right back, center mid. He played kind of everywhere. And I suppose he eventually ended up as a center mid and stayed there for most of his career.
How about John O'Shea, yeah, JJ? Didn't he go from center back to striker?
Played every position, including goalkeeper for Manchester United. I don't think he ever played striker, though. Did he?
No, I thought every once in a while they threw him up
center
there.
Mid. No, he'd go center mid.
Yeah, all right.
But for someone to take on, be known for one position and then end up in another, our listeners will have some. I know they will.
Sure,
and maybe I'm
sure.
Just tired. But it was an interesting question.
Yeah. No, it is interesting. And it's interesting to see him thriving at that spot, a player that had kind of been written off in a lot of people's minds as a bust. And now I don't think anybody looks at him that way. Miguel Almiron as well. Great goal from him today.
I know I've already picked my favorite goal of the season. Or was that in the Champions League? I can't remember. But this might be, this was so good. Now, it came from a terrible attempt at Tottenham playing out. But even still, he had a lot to do and he did it with such aplomb. And the inspiration for his good form, Andrew, comes from one floppy-haired man from Manchester, if we're to believe the interwebs.
Oh?
Well, so you'll have to help me out here. So last season, who Grealish said this to, I don't know, but he said, take Mahrez off the pitch as soon as possible. He's playing like Almiron. Now, I think he was, you know, he was poking fun. He was having a joke at his teammate. He was talking about, he says, take Mahrez off the pitch. This is the quote from ESPN. Jack Grealish on Bernardo Silva's performance last season against Aston Villa. So that should probably be take Silva off the pitch or Bernardo. He's playing like Almiron. Like, was Miguel Almiron a byword for a bad player? Like, why would he reference Almiron?
I don't know. I don't know. That feels so harsh on Almiron. I didn't,
very strange. I mean, yeah. Almiron suffered form under Steve Bruce, poor form under Steve Bruce, like everybody else did. But I didn't think that he was a byword for. Like all around the Premier League, or was this just in Man City? They thought one player was absolutely rubbish. And so when someone was having a bad day, he was having an Almiron. I don't know where this quote is. Again, I'm going to have to lean on our listeners to help us out here. But the Premier League goal since Jack Grealish said this. Miguel Almiron 6, Jack Grealish 1.
Yeah.
I don't know what any of this means, but it's everywhere. And if Grealish said it, it's kind of odd. And who heard him saying it? And where did he say it? And how was it picked up? I need answers, please.
It's good to see you've done the work. You put the quote out there, but you have virtually no information to back it up.
ESPN, they're the ones that tweeted it without any context whatsoever, except that Jack really said it, and they got the names wrong in the caption. So
there's a lot.
Don't know what's happening.
There's a lot going on here. I think it's best to move on and just acknowledge that his goal was fantastic. Any thoughts? I don't have much on this. I grow tired of these discussions, but VAR played a fairly large role in this game today. Wondering if you had any thoughts on the first goal that Newcastle scored. Honestly, for me, it's one of those, whatever they decided on the field, I'd be fine with that being the call. They ruled a goal in real time. So be it. If it had been ruled a foul in real time, I would have said, yeah, okay, I could see that too. It's just not one that moved me either way necessarily.
I was fine with the call. I think Lloris ran into Callum Wilson rather than Wilson try to deliberately body check him.
The only thing I will say about it, even though where it occurred, you know, it occurred outside the box, so maybe that changes things a little bit. But you know, the only thing that's a little bit weird is, like, we talk all the time, JJ, about the way goalkeepers are officiated. They're officiated differently than every other player. And it felt like this was the moment where the officials decided that they're not going to do that anymore.
We're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. It just felt maybe that would, if I were putting on my Tottenham underpants and being real whiny, that would sort of be the approach that I would take, but I'm not really going to do that. I was generally okay with it. I'll say this. The call that I was really surprised with, just because I've kind of been conditioned now in a VAR world to believe that everything is a handball. I couldn't believe that Emerson Royale got away with that in the second half. I thought the second that went to VAR, for sure that would be ruled as a handball. That was stunning to me. And a potentially big moment had Tottenham found a way to get an equalizer.
Yeah.
But that's, I just don't handball. I've said it many times. I literally throw my hands in the air. I just don't know. I don't know what
is. I just want to go back to your comment about Tottenham underwear. I mean, you're wearing a Phillies hoodie, Phillies t-shirt. It wouldn't shock me if you had Phillies underwear on. Is that a thing? Mm. Baseball underwear?
Probably, but no. I'm wearing a generic Hanes brand.
Oh, the brand of the white man. Yep. Generic Hanes for the generic white guy.
Is that a big white guy brand?
Do you not think Hanes screams a guy called Steven? who lives in Pensacola.
Doesn't everyone wear Hanes? They are to underpants what Kleenex is to tissues. I mean, come on.
I'm Hanes. Wearing Under Armour.
You really think you're better than me? God, where does it end? Quickly, you made a note here in the rundown of Tottenham boot off at halftime. What do you make of this? I'm not surprised by it. Like, this is kind of where the sport is at now. Like, look, even when they were winning, they weren't playing great. They weren't playing inspired football. So I don't know that anyone is in love with what's going on there. So when the winning stops and that brand of soccer continues, yeah, I mean, and they're down two goals. Sure. Like, I'm not surprised. I don't think anybody should necessarily be surprised by that. So yeah, just not a great day. Very weird stretch. They set their record for their best start and then they lose three games in the league. Like, it's, I don't know. It's been just a weird season for them. You know, Conte said that they need time and patience and also for sure money. Yeah, I don't know. Like, some of this, the injuries are important. Richarlison, Kulusevski, Romero, Højbjerg, that's certainly three and a half starters. I don't know. Kulusevski and Richarlison, it's hard to see them starting together, but those are all starting caliber players. The fact that they're all missing it's obviously something. I don't know, but ultimately the problem with Conte's comment, like, a lot of that is true. Sure, patience. Like, teams don't usually go from barely qualifying top four to title contender in this quick amount of time. So patience is a normal thing to say. But, like, the problem is you look at what Arsenal are doing. Like, Tottenham are supposed to be ahead of Arsenal. They finished above them. They you know, their manager is more accomplished than what Mikel Arteta is. So if Arsenal can be doing this right now, I think it's fair for Tottenham fans to ask, well, what's happened to us? Why are they moving forward at that rate? And, you know, we spent a lot of money in the window last season. And by the way, that wasn't Conte's first window. Bentancur and Kulusevski was his first window, and they've been brilliant signings. So, like, it's not like he only just was handed the keys here. So some of that rings a little bit hollow to me, but yeah, I don't know. It's not, I think maybe expectations have to be managed a little bit. And I don't know that this team is really going to be contending for a title in this league. I think they can do good things, but it might be a bridge too far. That's just me. Let's see, JJ, let's continue now. Nottingham Forest and Liverpool. And I'm wondering if a forlorn JJ Devaney was seen kind of moping around the streets of Brooklyn over the weekend.
Not really. Well, first of all, I was upstate, so I was moping in kind of the countryside.
Okay.
Not really moping though, Andrew. I was annoyed because I did feel that we created enough chances to win the game. Forest played well. They were, you know, they did the usual thing that a team against Liverpool will try and do, get compact, make it hard for Liverpool. But there were some inexplicable misses. Like, Virgil van Dijk decides to be generous Verge and he heads one back to Bobby Firmino when he should have just headed it into the net in the first half. I think if that goal goes in, you seize the initiative, then it's a different game. But, you know, there was chance at the end. Dean Henderson made probably the best save I've seen all season. Right down low, right beside him, Virgil van Dijk. I thought the net was going to ripple. It did not. He made an incredible save. Despite the fact that he was wearing a baseball hat, which is always a bad sign for me for keepers. Even though he needs to because the sun has been so sharp. That's the third or fourth time he's done it.
It's a weird look. It looks weird to me. I don't know.
It is an odd look. And it doesn't even remind you of the days back in the 30s when goalkeepers wore caps all the time. This is a different thing.
He just looked like a guy. Like, he looked like someone from the crowd happened to be in goal. Like,
a man. Yeah, a man was put in. So, look, Liverpool didn't play that well. Really felt the pinch of these injuries. You know, when you're looking to win a game and the change you're trying to make up front is to get an attacker in, something fresh, and you're bringing Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain on, who hasn't kicked a ball in, 7 months? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is what the season will be. No away win so far for Klopp in the league. just erratic. You know, coming off a decent, well, more than decent week, the win over City, iffy performance, albeit a win against West Ham, and then to do this, it's going to be tough. And it feels like it's going to be a battle for top four, and that's it. And that the concentration for trophies will have to be the cup competitions. And you hope you can get guys back fit. You wonder what might happen in January. I would say not much. There's not really much else to say about this one, Andrew. Liverpool are what they are right now. They haven't been mended. I didn't think the City performance would mend them. As good as it was, it didn't suggest something that was sustainable either. And how is anything sustainable when you're losing key players like Jota and Diaz, and they didn't even have Darwin Nunez in the squad at the weekend? It's tough, but you got to give credit to Forest, because Forest needed a win in the worst way possible. And that fixture has such weight from the 80s when both sides were kind of in the top six of English football. And so, you know, the crowd at the City Ground were right up for it. I do agree with Jurgen Klopp. I didn't think Liverpool played that badly, but if you don't take your chances, you always leave yourself open, and Forest capitalised, and fair play to them. But I wasn't moping or sad. I'm kind of settling into what this season will be, which is one of those up and down, and you hope you finish top four kind of jobs.
It feels that way. That's how it feels right now. Your head is probably, I'd say your head's probably in the right place. Let's continue, JJ. The glamour fixture of the weekend, Manchester United and Chelsea from back on Saturday. 1-1, it finishes. A lot of late drama there.
Yeah, there was. Chelsea thought they win a penalty. Jorginho converts. They probably thought the job was done, but no. Casemiro pops up, becomes the hero. A galvanizing point for Manchester United, although they probably feel hard done by, as they certainly dominated the game's chances. But Graham Potter, it was interesting listening to BBC Five Live. They identified what Potter did. He saw that Chelsea were losing out in midfield. He got another body into midfield and kind of stifled United a little bit more. Although Graham Potter said afterwards, interestingly, Andrew, you know, however well they've done, Potter is not, he knows that they need to work harder. He says the attacking side of the field is something that he still has to figure out and fix. And if you were to pick one stumbling block, maybe for Lampard it was the defence, but for Tuchel it was figuring out the attack. And it still remains Potter's job to figure that out too, albeit he's 8 games in, so he's got plenty of time. But it was a decent game, I guess, and both sides will take a point and move on.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Manchester United, they come away, like you say, with just 1 point when they maybe thought perhaps they deserved a little bit more, and they leave this game also down a defender as we await word on the nature of Raphael Varane's injury, but it sounds like at the very least we won't see him again in a Manchester United shirt until at least after the World Cup.
Julien Laurent is reporting that Varane's injury, not as bad as first feared. He's set to miss 3 or 4 weeks, but he won't play for Manchester United, as you said, before the World Cup.
Right.
He had an MRI scan on it. But it looked much worse, Andrew. It looked like out for the season kind of stuff. But it's good to hear that, or at least from Julian's reporting, that won't be the case, because he's crucial to United and I mean, at 29, he's still in his prime and will want to be at a World Cup too.
Yeah, of course. He's such a huge part of both teams and whatever their ambitions are. So, we'll see what this does for his chances of being on that French squad. But hopefully it's nothing serious. Like you say, that seems to be where the initial reports are headed. Although I would contend that if you're not going to see him between now and when the World Cup starts, that's at least some degree of serious. But
yeah.
But it could have been worse. It certainly could have been worse. JJ, the Ronaldo issue.
Ugh.
So now, as you would have expected, and as has been the case, I think he's being allowed to leave on a free by Manchester United. The problem is the destination. There are not natural landing spots right here. That's kind of been what we've said about this from the start of, okay, like go, but there has to be somebody who wants to take you. I don't know who that is right now. aside from perhaps an MLS team. I don't know if that's just my American brain at work or if that's a real life thing. You hear rumors. I'll kind of have to see it to believe it, but I don't see like a natural off-ramp to this situation. I think it's something that they're for at least, I mean, certainly for the next month and a half, 2 months through January, they're going to have to figure out a way that serves all parties here. I don't know what that is.
I don't know either. I mean, Ten Hag has won this one. There's no question in the battle of the locker room, Ten Hag has reigned supreme. I think the way he's dealt with it has been brilliant. And Ronaldo has just looked like a petulant child, not an elder statesman, not a senior pro you want to keep around, but a petulant child. And Ten Hag has dealt with it very, very well. I don't know where he goes or what he does. Like, United should just release him. Eat the money, whatever they have to do, let him go. I mean, he's a huge wage drain as it stands. He's clearly not good for the dressing room, the locker room. And then you have Roy Keane on Sky before the game and after the game making the case for how he's been poorly treated at Manchester United. It was some incredible TV beforehand and then some even more incredible TV afterwards where Gary Neville and Roy Keane, ex-teammates, ex-Manchester United teammates, with almost like Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink caught in the middle. Like, how did I get into this, in the middle of this argument? As Keane and Neville kind of, Keane very, to me, unconvincingly, clearly with Ronaldo in his ear. That's what it really felt like.
So feels what was it, his it, argument?
His argument is that what Ronaldo did was, in walking away in the middle of the game, essentially, or at the end of the game, before the game was over, and then getting out of the ground, not staying in the locker room with his teammates. Worse things have been done at Manchester United. He quoted how Paul Scholes refused to play once for Alex Ferguson because he was upset at not being used in a game, in a league match, and then knew he would be in the League Cup team, and he saw this as an insult. So Keane was saying, worse things have happened. Second of all, Keane was, and this is where Keane's credulity really slipped. He was saying that how could United possibly not use this guy? He was top scorer last season. You know, he's still capable of producing. And the point that was made, and I can't remember who made it on Twitter, but it was an excellent point. They said, for those of you, and Keane would fall into this category, for those of you who say when United missed the chance, oh, if Ronaldo was on, he definitely scored that, you need to realize that that chance wouldn't happen. It wouldn't get to become a chance if Ronaldo's on the field, which is the whole point.
Or, I mean, that, or also, okay, fair enough, but like what chances will be created going the other way because he's not necessarily going to do the work that they want him to be doing.
Another excellent point. You've been talking to Brendan Rodgers. He identified that this time last year. So Keane was vehement. And we've had a few, I put the video up on our Twitter and a lot of our listeners like bemused because first of all, Keane as a manager wouldn't accept it. This is a guy who, when players were late for the bus at Sunderland, he left them behind. He had no tolerance for players not being present before the game. Imagine leaving in the middle of the game. It just wouldn't happen. So people were kind of struggling with that. But I think the context is Roy Keane believes he did not, as a senior pro, he was not let leave Manchester United in the fashion he wanted to. And he didn't feel that his exit was handled properly or that he was treated properly. And he has carried that grudge with him to this very day. That has never left him, no matter what he says. And he always quotes, well, I've seen Brian Robson and Steve Bruce leave and I didn't like the way they were treated either. So he is kind of channeling this Ronaldo anger. And maybe even channeling it over the telephone because it seems as if there's still big buds. And this is going into his TV performance. Any opportunity to give United a kick in, he's given them a kick in. Even though, how can you in the last few weeks when Ten Hag has done such good work? Keane has found a way because he bears grudges like no one in the world. Now, everyone, I know you for a fact. I know incidents from your working career that you have held on to and you've never forgotten. I know that. I think everyone has that. But Keane bears it like an open wound. And he is completely, like I said, channeling Ronaldo's current situation.
So he's projecting his own past frustrations onto this situation.
Right, because when Gary Neville pinned him and said, Roy, would you have Cristiano Ronaldo in that starting 11 right now? And Roy goes, yeah, I would, actually. Yeah, I would. He has to almost talk himself into it because he knows what he's saying is utter bollocks. But it's not about Ronaldo. It's about Manchester United and Roy Keane's relationship. It made for unbelievable TV, if awkward TV, because you have Neville and Keane shouting at each other and you have Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank in the center as well. Now, Jimmy got a few words in, and one of the words he got in, which was very apt, was United can't continue to carry Ronaldo. And that's the sad fact. They would be carrying him.
Yeah. I don't see a way forward. You know, we've talked about this before, how if you're a coach or a manager, really in any sport, there's almost nothing harder than managing the end of a legend's career, because that legend still thinks that they're capable of doing the things they did before. Oftentimes the fans believe that, but it's up to the manager to understand that that may not be possible here and to play the role of bad guy. Now, having said that, I don't know if that fully applies in this situation, because I don't think Ten Hag is being viewed by anyone as the bad guy. I don't know if you're seeing differently, but I think everyone pretty much agrees with the stance that he's taken here.
He's won hearts and minds. And if anything, people are kind of happy with it. They like this. They like the discipline daddy. You know, they like the fact that, what was his line? Culture and values are more important. You know, that has got to be. That, oh my God, if you're a supporter hearing that, you love it. You absolutely love it. And they're doing well and they're playing well. And I don't think a draw against Chelsea the other night is going to do anything to dissuade Manchester United fans that Ten Hag is right and Ten Hag's the guy to take them forward. And Ronaldo is yesterday's man.
Yeah. And for anyone who thought that a new manager to this league like Ten Hag could be potentially bullied by, you know, a player of this status, well, I mean, clearly that couldn't be further from the truth. I think that's bore itself out at this point.
But he's done it well, hasn't he? He's never got personal. He's never got drawn into anything like that. He's kept it between him and Cristiano Ronaldo while hammering home publicly the values of the club. And you got to give him credit. He's done well.
Yeah. Let's see a couple other quick things, JJ. I just want to mention this. I think it's important to admit when we've been wrong. On the last podcast, a thing happened. It might be up there with the most wrong I've ever been on a subject. And that's saying something, because I've had many swings and misses over the years. JJ, the way I dealt with Jesse Marsh's job status during your game of Factor of Fear for coaches on the hot seat, it was a disservice to the audience, to my family. And I just want to say the way that I sort of disregarded him being on the hot seat was, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I was orbiting another planet. He's obviously on the hot seat. It wouldn't be surprised if by the time you're listening to this, he's been fired. So there you have it. I needed that to be said.
Yeah. 7 successive games without a win. Lost at home to Fulham today. The South Stand at Elland Road chanting "You're getting sacked" in the morning at him. Although I was listening to the Square Ball, who we've had on our podcast, the Leeds United fan podcast, and they said that the South Stand started singing "You're being sacked" in the morning, and then kind of realized you shouldn't sing that at your own manager. That's not the done thing. And then they kind of stopped.
Yeah.
But the fact.
That's a weird look to me. Like, I don't know. And teams do that. I mean, I know, you know, Tottenham were going after Nuno. Tottenham fans were going after Nuno near the end of his time. So, like, I know fans do that. But, like, I don't know. Jesse Marsh, he kept them up at the end of last season. It seemed like fans, for the most part, had kind of rallied around him and in some ways had embraced him. So, I don't know. To be almost, like, excited at his sacking seems a little bit strange.
It's not that. It's you don't sing that to your own manager. You shouldn't. That's a truly toxic scenario if that's the case. But I listened to the rest of the Square Ball, Andrew, and what they've come up with is that in the kindest, most polite and analytical way, like they said, they just think when Leeds go out to play now, there's no pattern of play. Like, it's a bunch of guys running around. They can't see it. And they don't see what they're trying to do. And he feel, and now, the players came out and backed Marsh. Liam Cooper backed him this evening. Luke Ayling backed him this evening. But what are they going to say? I mean, players are always going to say, I mean, unless they're really, really annoyed or have been dropped, they're going to try and stand up for the manager. But yeah, the guy said they don't see what Marsh is trying to do. And that's a huge, huge problem.
Yeah.
And they also...
Go ahead.
They've also kind of said that, you know, he manages in the Red Bull style. And then when that's not working, he tries to add his own Jesse Marsh elements to it. And it's just, it's not happening. It's not happening for the team, which I would have said was unfair if you'd watched them against Arsenal. But then I watched them on Wednesday night again, away at Leicester in that defeat. And they were, I mean, abysmal. They were so dreadful. And if they didn't have Sinisterra, who could dribble the ball and crack a shot off the crossbar, they wouldn't have had anything going forward. They were truly horrific.
Yeah. A couple things. I will play the role here of the American, and I will try to kind of defend him. Now, first off, I'll say this. They've taken fewer points at this stage this season than they had last season. And the manager last season got fired, and he was a legend there. So that doesn't bode entirely well for Jesse Marsh. A couple of things, though, I guess, on his behalf. Look, it was probably always, like, when they started strong, maybe that was a little bit of fool's gold. We had said in our preview podcasts, at least I did, that, you know, losing the likes of Rafinha, Calvin Phillips, it was probably always going to be difficult for them this season. This season was probably always going to be about managing to stay up rather than reasserting themselves mid-table or contending for Europa League, something like that. This was probably always going to be a just stay up kind of season. Also, too, I mean, you know, I don't know what Jesse Marsh does about this, but JJ, no players had more big chances this year without finding the net than Patrick Bamford's 9. Like, as a manager, one of your jobs is to put your strikers in position to score goals. Whether or not they do, he can't kick the ball for him. I mean, if Bamford has been in position with 9 big chances this year and hasn't scored, how different is the complexion of their season if at least 3 of those 9 go in? Who knows? So, not, you know, some of it is, of course, him. Some of it is the players they lost. Some of it is players who he's probably relying on to do a job, not necessarily doing it. There's a lot of factors at play. In the end, though, what you said is probably going to ring the truest. The situation there feels a little bit toxic, and unfortunately, he might, you know, like we always say, you can't fire the players, so he might be the one who has to pay for this.
Yeah, and Leeds fans will be, if it does come to that, they're going to be really upset because they have to start all over again with some other manager and away, and the cycle begins. John Muller, here's another defense of Jesse Marsh. Leeds goal difference, XG difference, and SPI are all better than last season despite selling Rafinha and Calvin Phillips. Mm. And even after these losses, the models and bookies don't think that they're that likely to get relegated. This doesn't have to be a crisis. To John, I'd say, that's all fine. If you keep losing football matches, no one cares about the SPI. Like, I really do believe in the underlying metrics, and those are good for Leeds. They suggest there's somewhere to go. But, like,
well, what he's suggesting, though, potentially, is that, what's the saying? Results are temporary, form is permanent. Like, believe the form, not the results, and assume that the results will change to catch up to the form.
Right. But again, have they upgraded significantly at center back? No. Do they need probably a left sided player? Fullback, maybe, not maybe, yes. And someone else other than Bamford leading the line, 100%. And they don't have any of those things. So there was apparently a lot of sack the board. It wasn't just directed towards our man of sunny disposition from Wisconsin. There was a lot about Kinnear, Victor Orta, and Radrizzani too.
Here's one question I have about this. Maybe I'm overthinking it. So 4 of Leeds' next 6 matches are against Liverpool, Tottenham, City, and Newcastle. Does that in some ways help him? Like, if you were the board and you were thinking of installing a new manager, would you want to do it now when they're likely to run into that kind of brick wall of opposition? Or would you want to do it maybe when there's kind of like a softer landing spot ahead where you can have a chance to build momentum? Maybe I'm overthinking this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you probably are. Yeah. If you do it now, you have time Although I spoke to my Leeds United friend tonight, Welsh Wayne, and he said, okay, get rid of him. Who comes in? Like, can you think of anyone right now? Because I couldn't.
No, but I'm not out there scouting managers. Like, I believe right, okay, that there are people who know better than me.
If you get rid right now, then you've got time and you've got a break then for the World Cup, and you can kind of rebuild and give the manager time to get his feet under the table and maybe prepare for January if transfers need to be made. The question is, do you feel like it's going to get better under Marsh? It's a gut check almost. Is it going to get better? Not in the foreseeable, not in that run of games.
Yeah, it's tough opposition that they have coming up. So that complicates things, certainly. JJ, I know Everton, we talked about them a little bit on the last pod. They responded nicely with an important 3-0 win over Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I mean, we were. I don't think anything we said was incorrect as of the pod on Wednesday night, but to put in a performance like this has got to lift everybody. Dominic Calvert-Lewin provided the spark, according to Frank Lampard. That is a huge result. They needed it, but the proof in the pudding will be go on a run. Like, give us a stretch. Give us a long, large sample size from which we can make proper comments on Everton. Not just one game here and a game there offering bits of hope. But this is it. This is a huge win, a big win.
Oh,
and absolutely. A resounding win.
Absolutely. Very important for them. And then finally, JJ, we had a feeling this was coming, and in fact it did. And Steven Gerrard out as Aston Villa manager.
Yeah, and Villa respond by playing a 4-2-3-1. A formation that their supporters have been crying out for, and they battered the shit out of Brentford. So there you go. That's how it works.
Yeah. What happens to Stevie G now? Wait for his next job, or does he kind of recede into the background for a little bit? Maybe join up with the media, Sky Sports, something like that. I don't think he should be finished managing. You know, he had success at Rangers. Okay, things didn't go well for him at Aston Villa. That shouldn't be a career ender. If he wants to keep managing, I think someone should give him a chance.
Where do you see him? Well,
I don't know. Does he have to go back to the Championship? Maybe. Whether or not he's willing to do that, who knows? I don't know if he walks right back into another job unless somebody, you know, unless you get one of these teams that are trying to win the press conference. So they think if we hire a big name, that'll appease the fans. I don't think that's the right way to do business, but that could be his way back into another Premier League job. But
Do you not think that, you know, his run at Aston Villa was so uninspiring that it's gonna make people wonder about this guy?
Yeah, like I said, I don't think I would hire him right away for another Premier League job. I think he'll have to go to the Championship or somewhere else to reprove himself. But I don't think, a lot of people have, like, why should he never work again?
It's not, nobody's saying that, but I can't envisage a place where he goes right now. It's hard to see it. And also, I think Klopp said the right things. He was asked in the press conference, have you spoken to him? He said, yeah, I spoke to him briefly last night after he got fired. We had a conversation on the telephone, and Klopp said the right thing. He needs to take a break. He didn't really take a break when he retired. When he retired at LA Galaxy, he went straight into coaching, youth coaching at Liverpool. Next thing you know, he's up at Rangers. How about take some time off? Take some time off and decide what you want to do. Because football, as much as it's been his life, it's always been a huge burden for him too. He's a man who carried a pained expression right throughout his career. Carried the weight of a city, done excellent at Rangers, however many caveats you want to place on that. It's not gone well at Aston Villa. I'd hit the beach. That's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly for a little bit. But, well, we'll see. I'll be curious to see where he goes next. JJ, that's about all I got for the Premier League. Quickly, MLS, we're into the conference finals. It's official now. The top two seeds in the West, LAFC and Austin FC, that should be a fantastic conference final out there. I would tend to lean LAFC's way just for the dominant season that they had, finished 11 points above Austin FC. But, you know, Austin, I mean, they've got star caliber players in Druisi. They will be, you know, that will be a difficult task for sure for LA. But I would tend to lean in their direction right now.
I thought Thursday night's game was just, again, you know, we often talk, if you're trying to sell the Premier League, Man City, Liverpool, they the El Tráfico, the derby, it was so good. So many twists and turns. It's a brilliant, brilliant game. And I think I saw enough from LAFC to suggest that I agree with you. I think they'll get it done. I think they'll sneak by.
It's just interesting, too. I mean, remember after the Bale signing, like what a potentially seismic move we thought that had potential to be. We had Max Bretos on to talk all about it. You know, we did a lot on the significance of that. And you know, he's kind of a bit part, if that. Like, he's hurt, which, you know, so who's to say? I guess if he was in form, maybe he'd be contributing in some way. But, like, that's just hasn't been what they've needed him to be at any point throughout all this. They're good enough without him really needing to be a contributor.
Few appearances off the bench. I'm sure the training has done him good. Being injured now, not ideal. But this was a very weird transfer that seems, if it was transactional, everything was pushed towards one side, and that's Bale in the World Cup. Certainly LAFC haven't got that much out of it.
No, I mean, maybe, I don't know. I'd have to see what the marketing side would say about that. Maybe the tickets sold after that. They always sell well, though, so I don't know that they necessarily needed that to happen, but maybe they sold more tickets, maybe they sold more merchandise, maybe there was some kind of positive transaction on their side. But in terms of on the field, yeah, I mean, they were really good before, they're really good after, and I don't know how much of a difference he really made. So props to them. They're a machine, first-year head coach, hasn't mattered. And along those lines, now we go to the Eastern Conference where, I mean, less than a first-year head coach. Nick Cushing took over in the middle of the season, and here NYCFC are. JJ, they had a 10-game stretch during the course of the season where they won just once. I mean, there were moments along the way here where this could have gone completely haywire and off the rails. And I give them enormous amounts of credit for finding it late in the season. Still finished third in the Eastern Conference. Had a couple potentially tricky fixtures, especially going to Montreal in the quarterfinal. And 3-1. And it's like, you know, Maxi Morales, Hébert, these guys just have like withstood the test of time and still, you know, brilliant players for them. Morales, especially, who scored in both games so far. And now they get, it's that rematch against the Philadelphia Union in Philly, in Chester this time, or like last time. And I mean, I look at this and I just keep thinking about the same thing pertaining to this match. You know, the Union, the chip that they must have on their shoulder after narrowly losing to NYCFC last year, missing, what was it, 11 players? I mean, most of whom were key players last year who, because of COVID protocol, were not able to play in that match. I mean, look, NYCFC, they'll be up for this, of course, and they'll have their own point to prove that, you know, they can battle through the manager change and Tati Castellanos, their best player, leaving during the season, and they can still be a great team. I'm sure they'll want to show that, but the Union must come into this game just thinking that this is like the definition of unfinished business for them.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention what you were saying about New York City. Like, even look at the defense with Sean Johnson, Taylor Holm, Shano, Callens, and then Maxi Morales, like you said, Ebert. Like, there's a lot of experience and they know how to win, and the kind of the flighty early years of NYCFC is behind them. They're stone cold winners. As for the Union, Andrew, like, what is your gut telling you? Do you think that they will actually
not test positive for COVID? Yes, I believe that they're probably all locked in a bubble right now. Either that or testing is just, it's just a thing of the past.
It'd be a lovely thing if they came out and kind of avenged last year's mess and went on and won the Eastern Conference. That would be pretty great.
Well, it's certainly what they'll want. You make a good point about NYCFC, too. You know, Sean Johnson is probably somebody who we don't mention enough when we talk about NYCFC. And he's just, I mean, he's been so good for them. I think Cushing himself even talked about, like, you know, they switched up to a back four and it didn't work. And Sean Johnson bailed them out. Like, you know, he was huge against Montreal. So, you know, don't underestimate. I mean, the goalkeeper matchup in this one, you know, because Andre Blake, I believe, was one of those players last season who missed that match for the Union. A Blake Johnson matchup in this conference final and goalkeeper. It's great stuff. And I think that one's a week from today. We're recording this on late, super late Sunday. So I think it's the 30th. And that should really be a fun one. And then, I mean, just looking at also the collateral damage of NYCFC advancing to the Eastern Conference Final, and that is Montreal. And we talked about them leading into this as this, you know, I'm not saying that they're that this is it, but in some ways it kind of felt like it with some of the really brilliant key players who are now saying goodbye to the club. Of course, Georgi Mihailovic, chiefly among them, who scored in this game in the 3-1 defeat as he heads off to the Dutch Eredivisie now. And oh, boy, that to get that game at home against the defending champs, it feels like this is going to be a missed opportunity that they probably, this one will probably sting for a while, I would think.
I think so too. And they did so well to hold on to Mihailovic during the season. Remember, we thought he was going to be gone before the summer. So, it is going to sting, but they have such a tremendous fan base up there and it's such a tough place to go and win that I would just give props to NYCFC for coming out of there alive, because the previous game, Orlando, they found it all too much. But it'll be disappointing, but I think losing to NYCFC is no shame.
Yeah. I'll say this with what we're left with here. I would argue that we're pretty much guaranteed with a great final, like no matter what the matchups are. I mean, obviously, you know, putting my own personal biases aside, I think the Union and LAFC is the matchup that I think most people would probably want to see. That's just the two best teams, unquestionably, I'd say, over the course of the season. That's what you want, I think, in the final. Plus, we've talked about the two completely different philosophies in how they do things. Just like, it would be fun to have that all on display. I just, two big fan bases, I just think that would be a really fun one. But, you know, NYCFC Austin, I think, carries its own great storylines as well. So no matter what, I think you're guaranteed a great final. And that's at least something. But it should be fun. Both of these conference finals are super compelling to me. Obviously very, very excited about it. JJ, should we wind it down with a little mailbag here?
Let's do a mailbag. It's a good mailbag. I like this mailbag. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter. Follow us there. You have to. At Caught Offside Pod on Instagram and caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com for emails. Michael Stevens starts us here, and I'm going to lean on you, Andrew, on this one.
Okay.
What are some infamous examples of pro athletes in other sports pulling a Ronaldo-esque sulk, an early shower routine? What did it do to their stature in the game or their team? I'm sure you can think, maybe not of like walking out in the middle of the game, but
I can think of one of those.
Go ahead.
I mean, I think famously Randy Moss did it.
When
was that? Was it early 2000s? Early mid 2000s? Yeah, I believe I'd have to
he
go
left
back
in the middle of a game.
There was still time on the clock and he left. I don't remember exactly how much time was left. I don't think there was very much, but there was enough that it was a thing. It was a big deal that happened. So that's the one that strikes me. I want to say there was one with Dez Bryant, maybe with Dallas. I'd have to go back and kind of check. I know the Moss one is the one that I remember the most. I know there are others too.
Well, Antonio Brown last season at the Jets when the Bucks were down 24-10.
That was a little different. I mean, like you're kind of like, you're right, but I think he was sent out. They told him, Bruce Arians him to get out. He kicked him off the field.
Okay.
So that might be a little bit different than a player kind of just doing that on his own. I'm sure there's more. I don't know. Hit us up at CO Soccer Pod, because I bet we're missing some big ones.
Yeah. Ryan Hill, what was the biggest advantage for the podcast being at ESPN that you worry about losing now that you're independent? I've got a few thoughts here. You can go first, though.
The platform, the visibility, being on that ESPN FC feed. I think that exposed us to a lot of soccer fans out there. Ultimately, you know, there might be a lot of soccer fans out there who just kind of go to that feed for soccer content, may have clicked on us, not even realizing what we were, just saw like a podcast, saw the description. They might've thought that they were about to get, you know, Dan Thomas and Craig Burley, but I think it, ultimately it was on us to have like kept them after they listened. But I think a lot of people probably found us that way. Yeah, that for me, leaving ESPN, that was the biggest worry, is that they kind of gave us a visibility being associated with them and on that ESPN FC channel that, you know, is hard to replicate. So
I would say that would be it for me. I would say for me, it's that for most, almost exclusively, all our guests we got, they didn't come through ESPN. We went out and got them ourselves. And it's kind of easier to sell your podcast. Hey, do you want to come on and join us and talk about your book when you say it's a podcast with ESPN, because those four letters have that big cachet. And I would worry, not hugely worried, but I would be concerned that in the future, you know, you'd go and ask someone and they'd say, oh yeah, well, who do you work with? And it's not ESPN and it's not NBC. And they're like, oh, okay. And it might put people off. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, that's not as big a concern for me. I think that'll work itself out. I think that'll be all right.
Yeah.
Chris
Zolkowski, a proper way to eat fish and chips. Is it finger food or with a fork? Love the pod. You eat chips with your fingers. The fish, I don't mind you taking a knife to it or whatever, but the chips are with the fingers.
And now, by chips, you mean fries, right? Like French fries?
Yeah, our fries, but thicker. They're thicker than your fries. Our chips are kind of thicker. Chips, we call crisps. What you call chips. I'm talking about fries. Yeah, exactly. And if it's a battered sausage and chips, you do it both with your hand. And you go to Assault and Battery in the West Village. I'll give them a shout out for good fish and chips and good battered sausage and chips. Caleb, thoughts on the new Arctic Monkeys record? I'm going to circle back to you, Caleb, because I've never heard, or it's a long time since I've heard an album get ripped like this. Everyone on my timeline, at least, saying how awful it is. And that Arctic Monkeys were just so arrogant to think that anyone would want to listen to this. And this is a band which has a brilliant back catalogue. They've been so good and so popular. And, you know, there's a feeling that they've got to the point where they can be a bit, I don't know, glib. And a lot of people are saying that this is just not good and doesn't sound like them. I don't know. Have you heard it?
No. Don't really even know what's going on right now.
You don't know who Arctic Monkeys are?
I plead the fifth.
Oh my God. No, really?
Yeah. This is another moment where JJ gets to expose me for being
I'm not trying to expose
nerd.
You. I would have cut the question if you'd said to me, I don't know who Arctic Monkeys are. I wouldn't have even brought it up. Wow.
I don't know.
Okay. And finally, Bukoya Saka fanboy, can we get a recurring YouTube segment called JJ Gets Pitches? Where JJ talks about various pitch related stories, either current or past. For instance, one thing that made the goal of the century even more impressive was the state of the pitch, which apparently, even by contemporary standards, was in dire shape. When he says goal of the century, does he mean Maradona's against England? What goal is known as the goal of the century? I'm presuming it's that one. And if it is that one, yes, the pitch at the Azteca in 1986 was horrendous, to the point that loads of ex-players have talked about, when you ran on it, it kind of moved underneath you.
Aye.
That it never felt solidly bedded in. So clarify that one for me, Bukoya Saka Funboy, because I'm not 100% sure if the goal of the century is the same one that I'm thinking of, that you're thinking of. And that is the mailbag. Keep them coming. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us everywhere you can, even on all those weird podcast outlets that I've never heard of that you keep mentioning.
There's so many. It's crazy.
Oh my God. I got one today. I downloaded it to see, was our podcast on it? Castbox. And now I can't get off. And I think it's tapped into my bank account and now I've got no money left.
Oh no, you don't want that.
Castbox. What is this? I don't know any of this.
There's
By
tons
the way,
of
we're
them.
Not on it. The old feed is on it. So that's no good.
Well, this will all get sorted out. Don't you worry. We've got a whole army of people who are managing these things right now. So it's all
good. Look out for the YouTube. It's going to be up soon.
Yeah, I'm interested in that too.
Come to our Twitter. Well, I will. There'll be nothing on it when you go to it, but you can subscribe, and then you'll have the notification ready when we drop our first vid, as the kids say.
Wow. I mean, so this changes everything. Like having to get dressed up, worry about my background, like what's
behind
me.
You look good. I look like crap. I look awful. I didn't get very much sleep last night. It was a bad night's sleep. You look, whatever lighting that is in that wardrobe that you're recording in right now, you got to stick to that, my friend, because it works for you.
Yeah, we'll see. It's all about the background. I'm going to have to think about that.
You might have to shape the eyebrows a bit, but I think otherwise you're okay.
Shave my eyebrows?
No, shape them a bit. I think they're a bit unkempt.
Like I'm Andy Rooney? No, my eyebrows are fine. I'm not touching them. I'll make some mistake. Next thing you know, I'll look like Uncle Leo from Seinfeld when he gets them blown off in an oven explosion. I don't need that. Hey, this was fun, my friend. Of course, lots going on. This is a Champions League week, is it not? I believe.
Oh. Yeah, it is. It's a business end, my friend.
Yeah. We're getting down to it. So there's a lot coming up this week. It should be a ton of fun. Thank you all for listening out there. Of course, like we always say, tell your friends. Please tell your friends. Subscribe, rate, and review. JJ, good stuff, my friend. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
See you, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.